On this week's show, construction is the proving grounds for complexity with Lubomir Burdev and Cameron Azarbal from Prime Point. All right. You guys might notice it's just me because I wanted to bring two people because this is going to be a fun story. So, Cameron, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm wonderful that I finally tracked you down and got you onto a microphone so we can catch up officially. Excited because I've been around Prime Point for a while here, so we're going to have some fun talking about that. But, Lubomir, it's great to have you on the show as well.
Thank you for inviting us. Looking forward to chatting.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into the history here. Before we do, you guys know the deal. Check us out on youtube.com/@thecontechcrew. Follow us on social, follow the guests on social, share it with your friends. You never know, if you tap us on the shoulder, you might even be the next guest. You know that moment when you're buried in submittals, the electrical contractor swears they're working on the latest set, the mechanical disagrees, and nobody can find the same detail? Bluebeam solves that problem and more with Max. Stitching pulls together every discipline's drawings into a single continuous view, so architects, engineers, and contractors are finally looking at the same thing at the same time. Wild concept, right? Flag issues before they cost time and money. Find what you need fast and stop herding cats across 100 sheets. Same Bluebeam you trust, just way smarter. Free trial at bluebeam.com/trymax. All right, so I'm going to bring this because this was cool because I get to kind of do these things once in a while and say like, hey, I think this story is really interesting between the technology side and the construction side. So I'm going to start with Lubomir because that's the technology side. So we kind of talked at the beginning of this, but what was sort of the impetus behind your history and how you got here today?
Okay, so I grew up in Bulgaria, at that time a communist Bulgaria, and soon after the fall of communism, I came to the United States as a student at Brown University. I did my bachelor's and master's there in computer science. Then I came to the Bay Area, started working at Adobe for some time, Adobe Research on Photoshop, Illustrator, Acrobat. And that's where I developed the first phase detector. That was my first kind of introduction to computer vision, which we shipped at Photoshop Elements. And that was one of the very first, if not the first, commercial application of phase detection back in 2005, I believe. And I found computer vision really exciting. And so I wanted to pursue a PhD. So I ended up going to Berkeley for my PhD while I was part-time at Adobe. And then after that, I joined Facebook. And I was excited about Facebook because it was the largest place where you can, like, scale was really important for computer vision. And Facebook had the largest scale. And so I was the first person that Facebook hired to do computer vision. And I founded their first computer vision team. We built this technology that understands every photo and every second of every video. And after that, I did this startup inspired by the HBO show Silicon Valley. It was on video compression with neural nets. We got really great results. I sold the company to Apple. And then after that, I wasn't excited about a large company. I was thinking what to do next. And that's where LLMs were really taking off. I ended up focusing on construction because the construction industry is one of the largest industries, and the kinds of challenges in construction were just within a range of what AI could actually help solve for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting history of being at the kind of beginning of different technologies and seeing their usefulness and then bringing them all the way to fruition through scale, which I think is really unique because that leaned into why you picked the construction industry. And it's where the beginning sort of came from is there's a complexity in collaboration and AI has an ability to help in that area if it's done correctly. And well, as you said it in the beginning, where's the most complex collaboration there is? It's in a construction project, no matter how little or how big. So you came up with those ideas and co-founder and started working on it. And cool history, if you guys are remember the show here, I actually got to meet Lubomir before they came out of Stealth, and then they came out of Stealth on a show that I was co-hosting for Nate Fuller, which was super cool because I, you know, I met you guys then, but I also met Cameron then. So Cameron, talk about how meeting these guys, still Stealth, and why did it appeal to you? Like, we get a lot of people, and Lubomir is not one of these, but we get a lot of people that know better than the construction industry coming on in from tech, but that's not this world. How did that appeal to you, and what did it appeal to you about what they were working on?
Yeah.
Well, maybe give a little bit of your background too, because I just jumped through that. So give a little bit of your background too.
Sure. Yeah. Very different path from Lubomir. I think the one thing we have in common is we both went to Berkeley. But besides that, I did civil engineering at Berkeley, and I went straight to the GC world after that. I worked for Turner for a couple of years after college, and then I spent most of my career at WebCorp working on large commercial projects in the Bay Area. So I come from a general contracting background. When I met Lubomir and Hamid, I was in the middle of that complex collaboration process myself. We met, we chatted a couple of times. I threw some ideas at the team, and I was very impressed and amazed. We chatted about an idea. And we met like a week later, and they already had built something to address it within a week. And the speed of which they were moving and how they were thinking about tackling the problems that we are seeing, even without having a very extensive background in construction, it was really impressive to me. And it really spoke to a lot of the processes and pain points that I wish I had. And I really thought that this is something huge that we could really impact the industry with. And that was it.
That was it, huh? That you were sold. So Lubomir, I want you to talk a little bit about actually the problem that you focused this, you know, prime point on. So people get an understanding because, you know, they're listening in and they're going down the road and they're like, okay, so it's another problem of collaboration. Explain what it meant to you and what you were doing underneath. And then I'll have Cameron kind of show why that was helping him at WebCorp.
Well, so collaboration was the inspiration of it, but what we ended up working on was really we realized that getting into and truly understanding construction data unlocks a lot of possibilities. And so our platform takes all the project data and does deep parsing and builds a knowledge graph out of this. The features that we provide really fall into two categories: reducing risk and increasing efficiency. And for different customers, efficiency means different thing. For data centers, time is of the essence. For others, cost, reducing cost, and so on. But that's basically kind of the value proposition. But at the big picture, I see that like construction data, for example, there was a big transformation led by PlanGrid where the data was from paper to electronic, and that unlocked a lot of productivity. You can now pull the data on your device. You can search quickly, find information. So, and I think we're on the verge of a second big transformation, which is that we take this data and we represent it in a semantically coherent way. Because the data inside the PDF is still very difficult to work with. Like information about a room is distributed in many different places. You want to talk about the door, there is a graph that shows where the door is, the properties of the door in some table somewhere else, the jamb detail is somewhere else, and the hardware set is in the spec. It's all over the place. And so we see an opportunity to use AI to really reorganize the data in a way that is semantically makes sense. And it makes sense both for people and for AI agents that operate on the data.
It's a unique, I like that you use that analogy because, you know, way back in the beginning of the day of the show, we had the team from PlanGrid on and, you know, Tracy started with a real problem of paper plans and not even being able to physically slip sheet them or carry them and, or have all that information just in a mobile format so that you could see it. And so it really was a problem searching for help. And, you know, luckily she had Ralph to help her, you know, do that. This comes along. What is that process? So I love the knowledge graph. I love what you're talking about and turning it into data and all those things being in different places. But on a day-to-day to somebody listening, Cameron, what did that mean? Where does this come into play into what you were doing?
The theme that I saw a lot in my career is in the beginning of the project, once you win a job, everyone's so excited about building this thing. You look at the rendering, you're like, we're going to collaborate. The first kickoff with everybody is amazing. Everyone's going to do their part, collaborate, architect, owner, all the subcontractors. Everyone really intends to do a really good job on the project and be a team player. But after a while, kind of issues start bubbling up, right? You find issues in the documents, you are delayed on commitments, and that relationship between everybody kind of gets eroded a little bit, and the process gets a little bit less exciting. People are less collaborative. They're managing risks. There's covering your basis and finger pointing. And some of this are born out of not spending enough time upfront on digging into what you're committing to, finding errors that are already in the documents, you just didn't get to look at them, or just like you didn't appreciate some of the complications early enough. What that means day to day for us, what the tools we have and the features that we have on our platform is, let's say you're trying to do a constructability review. What that really means is someone with a lot of construction experience digging in and saying, hey, is this design constructible? Can we use different methodology, material, or, you know, does it meet the budget? And what we ended up doing a lot of times is just going through the documents and see if the design is coordinated or if there's errors in the documents that could end up being delays or change orders. So what if we used AI and computer vision to tackle some of that low-hanging fruit right off the bat? So you can spend some time focusing on the deeper critical thinking aspect of the projects. And you can apply that to getting revisions, understanding what's in the revision, reviewing a product data submittal, assisting with RFIs, just finding information. There's so many different processes that I feel like we are finally at a point with AI that we could help either automate a mundane piece of it or facilitate making the project teams faster in solving them.
Yeah, I mean, you hit on a couple of really critical pieces there that I think people overlook, right? And especially in the process, because, you know, this is why you guys started it. It is a complicated owner's need to have something, an asset of some sort. Those assets are very different in what they want. A data center is very different than a hospital, is very different than a power plant, a power station, than a water treatment plant, than a road, than a bridge. I mean, like, these are all construction projects. So they all want very and need very different things. But they follow some standard processes that can be sped up. I like how you said it that way, because, right, you get in revs. And especially as, you know, in this new modern world, we're like trying to move really, really fast, right? So the owner's giving you that basic idea of what they need. The architect's giving you the basic. The engineer's getting there. But a rev over rev, things are changing. And like you said, we're digging over thousands of things to find the needles in the haystack. And that's actually not getting us any closer to that outcome. And that's what we want to do, right? That's the constructability review. That's the ability to provide new means and methods, right? That's the other problem in construction is we have so much time checking boxes. We're not thinking differently and applying all these new things that are coming out, right? We have, you know, computer vision and an advancement there have led to so many new things that we can do from a manufacturing perspective, an offsite perspective, and an automated perspective. So it's really cool to see you guys take this and give us time to what I hope is understand the project.
Something I would add to your point, a lot of these processes repeat over and over from project to project. What I felt like we tend to start over again, like the same problems with this new team members now. And you can almost predict the movie on what's going to come up, what's the crescendo and how it's going to end. And part of it for me was, I can't tell you how many times in the project there was a scope of work that was coming up in the field. And I knew that there was like five things I should check from my past experience to make sure all the puzzle pieces go together. But that meant like sitting down in quiet space, spending a couple of hours, opening up a couple of shop drawings, open up the drawing, open the spec, open this, put them all together, really focus and dive in to see, oh, actually, these two things are not coordinated, or we're going to have a problem here with something that is coming up later. However, I had 20 things calling my attention every day in the form of an email, in the form of a deliverable that were quick, fast, easy tasks, but they had to get done. And I couldn't, like, you wouldn't get to that deep critical thinking early enough. What we can do now is maybe take care of that low-hanging fruit or the deep critical thinking. Maybe we can facilitate getting them faster because everything's now connected in this knowledge graph and you can just dive right in.
I want to bring back now to Lubomir, like you did, you mentioned the knowledge graph and how, you know, you're talking about different revisions, you're talking about submittals, you're talking about RFIs. How is this knowledge graph and what you're capable of doing, how does it facilitate all that happening? Like, there's a lot of people think you just chat with your drawing, and that's not what you're talking about.
How it facilitates. So first of all, from a user perspective, imagine, I guess a good example is you want to click on one detail and you want all the information about this detail. Where is it being used, referenced? That this back referencing doesn't exist in, as far as I know, in other products. Who is responsible for doing this? When is it going to be on the schedule? And how does it look from a previous revision? Are there any other files and shop drawings associated with this? All the information, like, just associated with this. So this is what the knowledge graph provides. And it provides to the user in our intelligent navigation platform, connected documents platform, but it also provides to our agents that are navigating the knowledge graph, that are looking for answers to questions or automating tasks.
Okay, so explain that a little deeper for me on, give me an example of where I might be, because we hear about this, but how your platform might be grabbing more for me and surfacing it so I can see it. What would an agent be doing in that? Because I kind of get how the two go together, but I'm wondering where the rubber meets the road.
Okay, so a concrete example, there is, like, if you want to ask a question, and we have this sample project, and one question is like, on which floor is camera 35, for example? And we have a schedule for cameras that has camera 35, and that drawing references the floor. So it's like you have to do multiple hoops in order to answer this question. And it's like for many questions, the answer is not immediately obvious in one place. You just have to follow these connections to get the answer. And LLMs, it's not like they will never be able to do this without our knowledge graph, but they're getting more and more powerful. But it is quite a bit of an indirect. You're basically hoping that they're going to recognize this, figure out what it is, go to the relevant page, pull that information and follow this link. We're making it much easier using this knowledge graph.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense because the LLMs are getting better and we're getting better at finding the needle in the haystack faster than, you know, Cameron used to be able to find it in a quiet room with all the details and everything up. But your knowledge graph is actually guiding it. So it's acting as sort of a table of contents for, hey, this is where you're going to go and where you're going to grab things and bring things together to speed it up, but create more accuracy and less probably false positives along the way or false negatives along the way. So when you hear that, Cameron, and you're thinking about submittals or RFIs, where is this the most impactful for somebody using it? Like that, where are you seeing that this makes a ton of sense?
There's so many examples in operation. So part of it is navigating the knowledge graph, navigating a drawing like a person would. But part of it is like just knowing everything that's in there. A lot of times the issue that I had, you know, generally what should be there, but there was always things that surprised you, whether it was a note that was hidden somewhere that you didn't know about, or there was an RFI written about a topic that you didn't know about because the team is so big and there's so many documents going past and forth, or you didn't know a status of a submittal. So imagine today, if you're a superintendent and you are preparing for a slab pour of the third deck and that work is coming up, you would probably have to go bug a couple of engineers, ask them what the status of the rebar submittal is, and are we all ready to go with, are the RFIs closed? And you know generally what the drawings are telling you and what the spec is telling you. So there is one piece of, okay, where is everything? Who do I need to talk to understand? Now imagine if you went on your schedule and you click on the third level slab pour activity, and all of this information was presented to you from the knowledge graph. So you know where the status of the submittals are, you know what RFIs are related, you know all the notes, all the details, all the specs that are related to that thing. So you don't have to deal with surprises by an inspector or right before you're getting ready for the pour by your quality control manager that you didn't do a piece of the work necessary to do it. Now you have to delay it or rework if you end up making a mistake. That is really, for me, the power that it unlocks in making someone do their job so much faster, so much better, with better quality as well.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. It's the ability to have all that information in one place and know what's missing. Instead of all the time being spent finding, it's learning. Because that's one of the things I hear as a negative. I've got a lot of videos out there and stuff, and I'll hear, you know, I don't want people doing too many repetitive tasks. And I had somebody say, well, but the repetitive task is how you learn and how you get intimate with it. And I'm like, okay, in school, yeah. But you're talking about a complex project, and that slab pour on, you know, floor 3, you're going to do it on floor 4, floor 5, floor 6. You don't have to start over at the beginning every time. It's about effectiveness. So it's not really, you're not losing any of your familiarity with the project. That's what they're worried about. Is it sounds to me like maybe you're even getting more familiarity in an easier fashion with the project.
Yes.
Go ahead, Lumir.
Lumir is like, yeah, I got to answer that one. Go ahead.
We are getting feedback from customers that they're getting up to speed with the project faster, because the concern is AI will just make you like answer the questions, then you don't learn anything. You just have to go and ask AI and you can. So, but using our product, it actually makes you go much faster to, you don't spend time searching for information. Like a great analogy that I like to use is, imagine if you had the internet, but you never invented the notion of a hyperlink. And every time you want to find something, you have to go to this web page and search for this thing to go to the next item. And we're introducing these hyperlinks right there. And once you kind of experience that, there's no going back.
It's huge too, because I mean, we're seeing this across the board with AI. Like, there's two ways to use it. You can use it, be dumber, can answer your questions for you, and you don't learn anything. You're just sort of the button in the middle. And yeah, you might get automated, but that's probably not a good idea. I have a son, saw him walk through the camera before. And so I'm interested in how teachers are approaching it. And it's like, I had at the AGC National, we were on with a professor who said, listen, I let him use it. I just spend now time, I talk to them about it. If they went in and used an LLM to help them articulate what they were thinking and answer this question in a thoughtful way and learn it and present their findings, I can tell in a second when I talk to them. If they're knowledgeable, if they can speak to it, if they're really ingrained, and when it's done right, they're farther in detail than they would have been had I not allowed them to use those mechanisms. Like you said, Lubomir, to just collect all the hyperlinks, just collect the pieces of the information that you really need to dig into and learn, and then digest those and be able to use them. It's exactly what you're talking about and doing in the project. And you're not talking about removing the human from the loop. And I think, Cameron, that's really important from your perspective for the industry, is like, this isn't about replacing people. It's really about augmenting something that, I mean, how many times do you think you took a risk without this kind of stuff on something and rolled the dice on that slab and that pour?
Yeah, I was actually talking to someone about this. There was a lot of times where, you know, because on large projects, you tend to handle a piece of the scope, and there's another team that handles another piece of the scope. And, you know, the hope is you've done enough coordination in the design and the shop drawing process where when you, let's say you build a curb, a concrete curb for the drywall to sit on or the current wall to sit on, you kind of hope it's at the right elevation and it's the right thickness and all of that. But to an extent, there were so many times we did the work and just hoped that a week later we didn't get a call back from the next subcontractor saying, sorry, guys, this is not going to work for me, right? You guys did something wrong and we need to redo it. That happens a lot because there is a lot of parties involved, from consultants to architects to subcontractors, and there's so many opportunities for things to go wrong.
It's the nature of complexity, right? From the beginning of your career and when I started in this till now, and Lumir, you've seen this, is like a $250 million project was a big project. A $500 million project was like a unicorn. We're talking three, six, $10 billion projects that are multiple JVs. They're JVing at the GC level. You're even JVing in the trade level, your subcontract. So the complexity of current jobs, I never even thought about it. Like, even if you could sit down, Cameron, now you're in a JV project. You're not even, you only have your portion. You don't have it all. You can't be everything.
Some of these projects, there is no way that you could wrap your head around everything. So you hope that everyone does their job really well and recognizes where they can impact the next scope, and they communicate that very clearly. And you can imagine how that could go wrong, right? There's so much that people need to handle. And to your point of replacing people, no, we don't see that. What we are hearing and seeing is there isn't enough people to do all of this work. With the data center work and all of the larger projects, it's not a matter of replacing people, is increasing their capacity so that if they're not doing some of these mundane, yes, you do it the first or second time, you learn it, but you don't need to do it 60 more times yourself. Maybe you can leverage AI to automate that process. Now, instead of you just managing the drywall scope, maybe you can now manage the drywall and the curtain wall scope and increase the capacity for that organization and that team to do more projects.
Yeah. And I hope eventually it opens up like you started on the constructability review and means and methods, and really bringing in the newer means and methods that we're going to need to build at scale, because we're never going to have enough people in the field, and we're not going to have enough with experience in the office. By the way, I have a theory here and a feeling that, and I'll bring it to Lubomir and see that in the future, because we got to know, where is this thing going to go? I think there's an opportunity to sort of democratize that experience. So as Cameron's working with the tool and the knowledge graph and it's learning over time, there's this ability to democratize what he knows, because that's our biggest problem, right? We have a gap between what a new person coming into the industry knows and can do and what we're, unfortunately, we're kind of handing over to them. We're handing over a lot of risk at the current moment, and we're not giving them near enough guardrails. So I'm wondering if there's this idea and where it's going to go in the future on not only just doing that, but what else do you have planned, Lubomir? Because I can't imagine you're thinking, oh, yeah, we're good. We'll just sell this thing, grow the team, we'll sell this thing, you know, to lots of people in the industry. What are you looking at next?
So you mean AI, you mean PrimePoint?
PrimePoint, yeah. PrimePoint, where do you see it going? But also, if you want to get outside the lines and just tell some other folks what they might want to be working on, that's fine too.
So I guess I share the vision and inspiration that Hamid, my co-founder, has, which is we are first-hand users of cloud code in software development. And the vision of cloud code is you just throw any project at it and it will just do the work for you. So, or at least it can help you get started on the project. So we see a lot of, and by cloud code, I don't mean cloud specifically. We use Codex and Cursor. There are many solutions like that. But software has completely been revolutionized by AI. And we see this transformation happening will happen in construction as well. It has taken longer because construction is a lot more difficult. There are a lot more, like, drawings are a challenge. There are unique things in each of the in the projects. And also, unlike software, it's a good analogy, but software also is a static thing that you're building over time. The project is evolving. In construction, things happen beyond your control. Oh, like this material is delayed, or we discovered this problem underground. And like things are constantly changing. And what you want is a system that really can anticipate the change, can be more proactive and say, hey, this is what I propose, like this will happen here. And this is where AI can shine. By the way, beyond LLMs, you need to have very good planning, taking into account everything that can happen. Like, imagine you're building a skyscraper and there is a crack developing, and now you need to take photos and you need to figure out from this multimodal experience the photos and the plans and material science and predicting future load and all of these factors together. What is the plan? How should we go forward? this is an incredibly complex problem that we hope one way PrimePoint and AI in general will be able to tackle.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen real world examples of that going wrong. And it would be amazing if not only they were able to do it actively, but passively. There's so many photos. There's so much documentation going on. It's not even getting cracked at the surface of what computer vision can do with it and then enable everybody else to react. So a bridge is cracking. You know, how many of those are we seeing? We're seeing drones do that now and fly them and video them and try to process that. But why are we having to do it from there? Why can't there all these passive things that we're using be collected over time? So I love to hear that opportunity to move it into forward action, right? Because that you're building something that can live down the road too. I'm wondering, Cameron, in your world, like, where do you see it going? And maybe if it was where would you see it go?
Yeah, great question. So one thing we've learned so far is whatever we're building today needs to kind of fit in with the workflows that people are used to. It can be a drastically new thing that people need to learn because you have to change your process and you have to add an immense amount of value for people to just change their process. So we're trying to show the value and fit within the process. And we're not asking people to build complicated agents to accomplish these tasks. So what we're doing today is we know a task that needs to be done. We either use PrimePoint platform to automate a piece of it or facilitate the project manager, engineer, superintendent to do it faster. Our view for the future is what you just mentioned. We have this idea of a lessons learned sort of feature that's more of an enterprise level, where I remember seeing so many 30, 40 years carpenter to general superintendent type of characters leaving the industry. And I remember how big of a void that retirement was. That was a superpower within the company that is no longer there. And those people are just irreplaceable. And we're seeing less and less people like that coming through the field into the ranks of, you know, a general contractor higher up. Our hope is we can tap into some of that organizational knowledge from previous projects, whether learning things that became problems in terms of change orders, rework, things that became RFIs, how the schedules evolve on different types of projects. And what if we could apply all of that to new projects that are coming up and automatically give you a report of, hey, these are 10 things you should look for given this database of history that you've had, and pass on some of that knowledge onto the upcoming projects. So that's something we're pretty excited about tackling in the near future.
Yeah, I mean, it's wild. We've been doing this now at the show for 10 years. And even in the beginning of this, we said, the problem with construction is most of what we're doing contractually, during the project, during anything, is we're looking over our shoulder for the problem and running into the next one. We're never getting to turn our heads forward because so much of it has to be reactionary. So you're really creating an environment where we can get there. I want to give you guys a little credit there because you could run real fast right now. And I would say that I know you guys are moving quickly, but I don't even know how to capture it. I mean, what's the culture like? Because you're moving fast, but you're not breakneck, throw the baby out with the bathwater speed company.
Well, I mean, when I was at Facebook, there was this slogan, move fast and break things. Now we have to move fast, but we cannot break things. Move fast and don't break anything.
It might sound easy, but it really isn't. It's really hard, especially given that new tool set you're talking about in building code does give you an opportunity. And I'll be the first to say, everybody on the show has heard it. Some people are taking that opportunity to move too fast and are breaking a lot of things. I don't mean construction. I'm not pointing at my construction people. Everybody knows my apps on the field right now for my travel and whatnot. I'm like, can you guys stop, slow down and test? Just saying. So it is hard because that you're capable of doing that right now. So how are you managing that balance?
It is uncharted territory because what we're seeing is things that would take weeks or months, features can be done in a day or less. At the same time, we are in a position, unlike our tool in construction, we are kind of, unless we actively try to understand the code, we can lose track of what's going on the code. Because it's not visual like construction, our product will bring you all the relevant information, you can see it for yourself. So there is this thing where if we move too fast, then we get like, we lose track of what's happening. At the same time, the flip side is if there are bugs, fixing them is very easy. You just say, go fix that bug.
I would add from the user experience too, just coming from the industry, you know how trust is so important in everything we do. And especially when it comes to technology, if you are adventuring with a new technology and you lose that trust in form of giving you wrong information or giving you too many false positives, now that's creating more work for you to like sift through what's the signal through the noise. After a while, you're just going to go back to the process, you know, whether, you know, that's with or without AI or any kind of technology. So part of it for us is, yes, there is a lot of movement. There's a lot of demand. We do need to be addressing those pretty quickly, but we also need to be very careful with the quality of it and staying close to doing our own testing, staying close to the clients, giving it to trusted design partners and caveat, hey, we just released this, test it, break it, give us feedback, improve on it before we go on a wider release on any tool or feature. And that's just so important for our industry.
Yeah, it's move fast and don't break things with an asterisk. Like, we'll tweak them a little bit and see how it breaks to our user group that we trust. All it is the same loop. It's just being compressed a little bit more. But that's what people, you know, I hear it all the time. Oh, I vibe coded into this and it'll be done. And it's like, no, you can't do that. There's a reason that the cycle is what it is, but we can amplify it a little bit. We're doing that in construction right now too. We're accelerating it all. So it's really important to know you're blocking and tackling, but then also be able to deliver. So I'm excited to see where you guys go. I'm just thankful you guys came and sat down now, because I think this is a key time for people to get involved and kind of understand more about where you're going. So, you know, Lubmir, Cameron, it was awesome to have you. Where can people go find out a little bit more about you, Cameron, and the company?
You can either go to primepoint.ai, our website. There is a form that they could reach out to us and we'll get back to them with some time to meet, or they can email us at contact@primepoint.ai and we will get back to them.
It's awesome. You should be reaching out. Lubmir, where can people go follow you and learn a little bit about more of what you're up to? I'm sure we're going to have a few of my folks that want to go follow you.
I guess on my LinkedIn page.
We'll get you out there. And any shows coming up? Anywhere you guys are going to be?
You know, the second round of the conference season coming up. So I think we'll be in Chicago for a Built World event in July. And then we're doing Procore Groundbreak, Autodesk University later on in September and October as well.
Awesome. Well, that is where people can go find you. And I appreciate finally getting both of y'all to sit down. This has been fun to watch, Lubmir. So I hope in another 18 months, we got you on here and you can tell us all about the new things. You as well, Cameron. And thank you for tuning in today to geek out for our interview with Lubmir and Cameron. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is the Content Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.